bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. Yes, it's a very special one because I've got the microphone the wrong way around. It's just me, just little old me. I'm here to run you through the week's news in photography and also answer a few of your questions. We've had a couple this week. Thank you very much for the people that send them in. If you want to send a question into us, then it's britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and just head it up photo question and ask what you like. We'll have a go at answering it. We answer them on the fly, so whatever comes out, comes out. I had a rather nice fellow last week who wrote me an email after the show and said how much he enjoyed the show. Thanks very much, Ray. Love you. The week's photo news. There's just me. Alex is working, so we're a bit stuffed. And Chris has got a new job, but there you go. What's been happening in photo news? Well, the first thing is there's a new sensor array out there. And the new sensor array reckons that it's going to be able to capture 3D using a single lens. Now, up to this point, typically what you've had is two lenses that are both gathering individual information separately and then putting them together on a sensor afterwards. And the sensor's been doing its jiggery-pokery with the algorithm and out pops your 3D image. There's a Samsung that I looked at last week, a Fujifilm that I looked at last week at a client's, and it did a really great job with the 3D screen as well at showing 3D. Now, the idea is that Panasonic have come up with this idea. They're talking about using a thing called a lenticular lens. Now, lenticular lens are the things that have got that they're split. So like a bifocal lens in a glasses is a lenticular lens, and you get the image distorted or changed through one side and changed through another differently. And what these lenticular lenses are going to do, ascend through separated channels. So you'll have red channels, green channels and blue channels coming in from left eye, right eye dominance, and they'll join them together again in a single sensor at the other end. So there's only one lens capturing and there's only one sensor capturing, but it's capturing two separate images effectively and then putting them together in an algorithm afterwards. That's as much as I can get out of reading the story, I'm afraid, but that's all there is to it. Now, this thing can be used in virtually any camera. There's nothing stopping it going into any cameras now. It's a production model is not available, but they've got a prototype out there, and it could change the way you get 3D imaging. The question you've got to beg is whether you really want 3D imaging or not, because I've got to say, in stills photography, why? Because you're going to need a special screen to send it out. This is supposed to be the way that the Nintendo is doing it as well, the Nintendo 3DS, but I don't know if I want a 3D camera or not. I think it's the biggest drawback. The other thing that's going out there in sensors is, where's the story? I've lost the bloody story. That was a good start, wasn't it? I'm normally doing all of this stuff and looking around when all the other people are talking. So I can't find that. Rambus, there we go. Rambus Pixel Technology. What they've done is, they haven't said how the process actually occurs. There's a little press release on their website that kind of starts to explain it. They're saying that the resolution and frame rate supported by mainstream mobile cameras can carry on using this equipment. This is a process for a sensor which will enhance low light. So effectively, it works like your eye. It's looking to smooth out very much the exposure levels that you've got between foreground and middle ground and background again. Unlike your eye, which is kind of taking frame after frame after frame constantly, the camera can't see high lights and low lights equally. This thing says the Rambus binary pixel technology mimics the brilliance of human visual processing by sensing photons using discrete thresholds similar to the rods and cones of the human eye. This binary operation creates dramatically better videos and photos from mobile and consumer devices that include a full gamut of details in dark and bright intensities. It doesn't tell you any more than about how it's doing it. It's not got any of the sensor technology that's in there. But what they're saying is that this is an effective add-on that's the same kind of size as the CMOS sensors that are already in your phones. And there's no reason whatsoever that this couldn't effectively just be dropped out and dropped in to existing phone models. If you've got software to support it and connections, then you could probably do it yourself, even maybe, who knows, on your own cameras. So that would be really cool. try and read the chat room as well, which isn't helping. 3D's just a gimmick, says Adam, if you ask me. 3D printer. Well, the lenses that I talked about there, those lenses are used for capture, but if you, there's a process for printing that does that as well, so it gives a 3D effect on the printing. A single lens and sensor for capturing 3D, I'll believe it when I see it. Well, you're going to see it, because it's. I think they're past the idea. Oh, God. I'm trying to read the chat room as well. It ain't working. Never mind. I'll edit that. Yeah. Mm. If you're thinking about buying yourself a DSLR, or you're going up to your first ever full frames camera, then you can go to Tech Radar. Tech Radar this week managed to publish all of the full frame sensors that they've reviewed so far this year, and they've given you high points and low points of every single one. They're not putting them in any ranking order or anything. There's no winner, no loser. It's just a full buyer's guide with all the reviews of all of the things that they've done. If you're looking for a if you're looking for a DSLR with a full frame sensor, then you really ought to get that, because it looks like it's well worth it. I've had a scan through it and I couldn't see anything that really leapt out at me. All I can say is I'm pleased to see that my 6D didn't come out too badly, because I spent a bit of money on that before Christmas. We like that. Do you remember Kokan? Kokan used to do all the filter stuff. I've actually got in the cupboards behind me here, I've got some little filter holders for holding the big square plate filters and stuff. I used to have loads of those. They're up in the loft somewhere, which means they're probably smashed, but never mind. Kokan are re-entering, if you like. I know they never went away particularly, but they've got a brand new range of filters coming out. They've got these things here. The packaging looks very Apple-y, doesn't it? It looks really nice. But they're called Harmony Filters. They're launching in the UK soon. They were announced in October 2012, but you should be able to get them in the next few weeks. They start at £39 for a basic UV filter, which, depending on the size that you buy, isn't that bad, I suppose. They're 3.3mm thick, so they reckon they're really light and really effective. Whether that means flimsy or not, I don't know. But you're going to have to look at your ring sizes on your lenses. The £39 is the starting price, which, if you're talking about it's £39 for a 52mm UV filter, then there's plenty better out there at plenty cheaper prices. If you're talking about you're getting 77mm or something like that, or an 80mm ring for £40, not bad at all. Not bad at all. That'd be a good price, but I'd some head out it. The £79.99 is if you want a circular polarizer, which, again, if you're talking about £79 for a 52mm circular polarizer, that's a really high price. And £154 for variable density neutral grey filters. And that really is expensive. But they're nice. They're okay. They'll do. Not the end of the world. We'll see. I won't be buying any, I don't think. We shall see. Next story. Do you fancy the Outex? I've got a picture of one behind me here. This Outex is effectively a big, large bag made out of rubber. I don't know if it's vulcanized or what. And it sits... do I use UV filters, says Ian in the chat room. Yes, I do. Every lens I've got has got a UV filter on it. Not because of the fact that it actually filters out any ultraviolet light, and because it stops it damaging the coating on my lenses. I just rather smash that than smash my lens or scratch it. So there's no other reason. The only thing I haven't got a UV filter on my 50mm and my 35mm, because they're so small and so cheap that, I mean, the 50mm, I use that 80% of the day sometimes when I'm out. And before now, I've dropped one and smashed it and thrown it in the skip. I dropped me 35mm the other week, and it doesn't manually it doesn't autofocus anymore. It only manually focuses, which I'm blind, so it doesn't help. But I see those two lenses as fairly disposable. I make more money out of those lenses than the cost of them is. So if I break one, I'll get another. It's not a problem. I haven't got a 50mm at the minute. Actually, I lent it to somebody, but there you go. I need to go and get another. Back to the Outex. This thing's a bag with a pile of straps, with a lens cover that comes in varying sizes that you can screw onto the front of your existing lens. It comes with a flash mount that comes over the top. It comes with a lot of extras that you can buy on top of that, whether it's a chest strap or a wrist strap or that kind of thing. And It waterproofs your camera. You can get a full water DSLR rig, but it's going to cost you $400 or $500, £500 or £600 maybe, depending on which one that you get. The idea of this thing is it's supposed to be relatively cheap and inexpensive and very flexible. There's lots of videos on the website of people that are doing surfing and that kind of stuff that are using this. Really, really nice. It does look good. And it looks like it does the job that it says on the tin, but I went down to try and sort one of these out for myself because I thought that looks like a good buy. I might get that. And I priced it up. If you buy one, you have to buy it based on your camera model for a start. So you can't buy one of these and it fits absolutely everything unless you just get lucky on size. You have to buy it for the specific length lens that you've got as well, so you can't buy another one for another lens and expect it to fit. And all the straps, etc., go on top of the cost of buying the bag itself. So I went and looked for one for a 6D with a 70 to 200mm lens, so that's not going to fit any of the cameras I've got, and it's not going to fit any of the other lenses that I've got, and I wanted an additional wrist strap on it. When I'd finally added it all up and all these little component parts had come together, what actually looked like about $120 suddenly turned into $344. So I'm paying probably in the best part of £230 to £240 there for a waterproof system for my camera for one specific lens for one specific body. Now, if you want a fully waterproof setup, you'd be paying an awful lot more than that for a proper rig. But for what it is, for the rubber bag and the eyepiece, and you pay extra for the eyepiece and extra for the lens piece, it seems quite expensive. And if you want to, say, swap it for another lens, I'm quite lucky because I've got the 24-105 lens, which is a 77mm ring, and I've also got the... What's the one I've got? I can't remember the one I've got. 24-70. And both of those have got 77mm rings, so it's dead easy for me to swap these two around. And there's just a bit of extra sag in the bag, which is why I thought it'd be a good purchase. But I'm not sure. If you want rainwear, then go and get some little disposable rain hoods from Amazon. They're about £1, and you get two or three. And they've got little zip tie drawstring things that go on the end, and they do just as good a job for light rain. Unless you're actually going underwater, you don't need this. It's not just a rain cover. But it's significantly cheaper than the other option if you want to go and buy it. An extra sag in the bag as a show title. I like the idea of that. That's fine. I can't read the chat room as well. It's ridiculous. What else we got? Nikon. Do you own a Nikon D600? Because if you do, you might be aware of the fact that it's got some real problems with oil and marks on the sensor. They've issued a proper statement that says there definitely is some appearance of multi-granular dust spots in images captured with the D600 that are on the... these dust spots are reflections of the internal dust generated by the camera operation or external dust particles that have found their way into the camera, either or both of which have adhered to the camera's low-pass filter, which is a piece of glass, effectively. Doesn't do a great deal more. If you want to deal with this, the first step you should do is clean the image sensor manually using a blower. If this doesn't remove all dust particles and you're still experiencing problems, then please contact your nearest Nikon service center. So there you go. Do it yourself. If you don't like it, tough. There. Photoshop, I've had a bit of a, or Adobe have had a bit of a play around this week. First thing is, they've updated Lightroom, and there's a new 4.4 release candidate out there for people. Listed in that is the Hasselblad Luna. This is a camera that doesn't even exist yet. So, my D6 wasn't updated for bloody ages, or 6D rather, and now they've gone and given us something for the Hasselblad Luna. See what happens when you have money? It's just not fair, is it? So, when you buy your Hasselblad Luna at however much it is, very expensive, then you'll have all the stuff you need already in Lightroom 4. I hate you. I hate you, Adobe. But I'm tied to you. The other thing is they've updated Adobe Photoshop RAW, Camera RAW. That's now up to 7.4, and it's fixed some issues with certain cameras, the Fujifilm stuff, and also correction on a few lenses. One of the things I noticed when I got it was that I had a play with Photoshop 6, and I put Camera 7.3 on that, and it corrupted all of my image information for lens for correction of barreling and stuff like that. So I quickly took it off, but it's also affected 5, so I haven't got any lens correction anymore now, thanks to that. Cheers, Adobe. Love you to bits, mate. Love you to bits. There's also a new application that's in the Mac App Store. There's a nice little picture of it. It's gorgeous. I bought this because I thought, well, I'll give it a try and see. It's called Photo Bulk, and it's a batch processing, watermarking, and file reduction system for your images. All it does is take your JPEGs, you drag and drop them across, and then you batch process them. You can put a watermark on the front. It's a physical watermark. It's not a digital watermark. It doesn't change any of the IPTC data at all on your image. But it doesn't do a bad job. It's £6.99, so it's not cheap. It's going to come in at the $10 mark for the US listeners. It does what it says on the tin. It puts a rather nasty text watermark on the bottom right-hand corner. You can change where that takes place if you want. You can stick it smack in the middle of the image. Or you can put a predefined image on it. The one that it gives on the website is Photo Bulk, and it's just a writing, but it's an image instead of text. You can't change the fonts or anything like that, but it does a decent job of that. And then it reduces the file size down to a minimum amount, in quotes. The one thing that's nice about this is some of the photo reduction applications, what they actually do is they will put a limit of 17 or 18 megapixels on the size of the file that you can put in. What's nice about this one is it takes anything. I've put some 20 megapixel images through and it's worked just fine. If you take a full JPEG and shove it in, it reduces it, and it does a good job of reducing it. The quality is extremely good. You don't lose hardly anything in it. Tiny bits of noise appear, but it's nothing to worry about. The only thing that's interesting is I reduced some images last week for a firm, and I thought, well, I'll use these as a test. So I put the reduced file size images in, and this thing actually increased the file size on the minimum setting. So I don't know what's gone on there. With the big images that are originals, it does just fine. But if you stick in pre-reduced images, it seems to throw it into a bit of a wobbly. The other thing that's nice with it is it doesn't overwrite your originals, which if you look at things like JPEG Mini is great, but it's got a 17 megapixel cap. It's £10, which is an awful lot more than this is, and it doesn't do the watermarking, and it also overwrites your originals, so you must make a second copy before you drag it in. With this one, you don't overwrite. It does a save as into a separate folder, so we like it. Panasonic have got a new little camera out. This thing is it's the SZ9, the DMC SZ9. Now, my wife's got a little tiny Panasonic, the DMC F something or other, and it's great. Love it to bits. Takes really good pictures. This one is the same kind of thing. It's got reasonable specs. Let me just try and find the specs for you. I've lost them now. But the one conclusion that came out of the review that I read was that it was good for price. It's around £200. But apparently there's some corruption of the image on the ISO settings at low ISO at 100. What would be causing that? I don't know. But having seen the other stuff in the DMC range and used one for the last few years, it doesn't put artifacts on the images at 100 ISO. So I think there's got to be a production error with this one. There might end up being a recall on it. But the review that was conducted by Photography Blog said they definitely saw green specs on it. It's standard 16 megapixel sensor, 10 times optical zoom, 25 to 250 millimeter lens at 35mm, and a 3-inch LCD screen on the back. Full HD video. With 14 digital effects, won't that just swing the sale for you? But for £200, it's good enough. It's a handbag camera. It'll work just fine. It's nice. It'll be good. Yeah, and Adam says in the chat room, that's a nice little Lumix, not bad on the price. No, it isn't. It's fine. Watch out for that ISO 100 thing. If you get a chance to go and try one of these, I'd have a go and take a card with you and see what the camera shop says, but not too bad. Right, so questions then. Your questions, you write in, we answer the questions, we do the best we can. That's a bit of a ram through the photo news, but I mean, you know, there's no discussions going to happen. This was just me. I do talk to myself, but steady on. First question or first comment comes from Gordon. Hi guys, just a quick note to say thanks for the tips the other week. I've taken the portrait of my old wrinklies and I did use a reflector and it turned out okay. I'll look forward to the unveiling of the first commission masterpiece at their party in the spring. I did take your advice regarding the video. Lots and lots of practice. I guess I should have worked that one out for myself, but thanks again for the answers and for the shows in general. Hope to see you at the Bash if everything drops into place. Regards, Gordon. The Bash is the 6th of July. It's definitely happening. I've booked the place. There's going to be tickets up on sale on the website next week. So there you go. There'll be a banner to pay for them. First things first, Gordon sent me the picture, and this was a picture he took of his 90-year-old parents. It's pleasant. Nice. Well done, mate. The only thing I would say is the thing I pointed out very quickly to him is that it's underexposed. What you can see there on the image is the fact that the whites, which are in his mum's top that are underneath the pink top she's wearing, are grey. So one of the basic things that you can do with any of your images is look for levels. Most images will correct adequately through levels. And with just a levels change, and I toned down the yellows just a little bit because he was in a slight bit more yellow than he should have been, and raised the blues, that was the result that came out. If you're watching the video podcast, you'll see the difference. But that is the effect. I mean, effectively, just levels change alone will do that for you. And one of the other stories that was around this week was how to set up a photo shoot. And they'd done it with the Galactic thing with Virgin. And the one thing that I'm always going on about with you guys is white whites and black blacks, so that you've got a good cross-tonal range in all of your images. If you want to give something to someone, if you want to have a good image at the end of your session, you've got to make sure that you meter correctly so that the whites are white and the blacks are black. You want a good, accurate spectrum. And I looked at the stuff that had been done on how to do the photo shoot for Galactic, and one thing that struck me, the image on the left is the image that was published by them. And it's got a lovely soft focus effect on it. There's been a bit of Photoshop gone afterwards with some tinting as well and changing the coloration. But the one thing that struck me about that image on the left, it's underexposed. The whites aren't white. The planes are a dirty grey. The one on the right, all I've done is lift the levels by a very, very small amount. And all of a sudden, the tonal range in his face is better. You can see whites in the aircraft. And the colours have popped as well, just by that little effect. I haven't changed the artistic quality of the photo. That on the left is an underexposed image. You should not be giving that to a customer, ever. Ever, ever, ever. So always, always, always look for your levels. You can see the differences, Boo. Absolutely. I wouldn't do it if you couldn't. But there you go, Gordon. All you've got to do is change levels and you'll get the image to just pop straight away. It makes all the difference. Levels, people. I'm telling you. Photoshop for levels. That's where you want to start. Right, first question then. Graham. Hi, Ewan and Alex. I would love to learn more about photography. I would love to know your opinion on online learning, in particular the photography industry or anything that you may have come across in the past. Attached is an advert for TPI. Many thanks, Graham. There was a good point that came up last week. We were answering Adam's question, who's in the chat room at the moment, about the Sony. I've had passing goes with a couple of the Sony cameras. Alex really hadn't got anything to say. When we're talking about some of the compacts and things like that, we read the reviews. We actually don't use amateur equipment that much. And one of the points that Alex made after the show had finished, he said, I find it really hard to comment about the compacts and that kind of stuff because I've never been an amateur. And I haven't either. I mean, I started getting paid for doing this when I was 17 years old. And effectively, you know, I took a nice picture and someone said, will you take another nice picture? And that's how it went from there. I just learnt as I went along. In terms of learning about photography, the online stuff's fine, but you can't beat going down to your local college, I don't think. If you go to adult education, your local school, something like that, you will probably find that there is a photography course there. Look in your local newspaper and that kind of stuff, and you really will find some great people in there, photographers that run courses, do it very well. I've had a couple of photographers come and work with me, and I've helped them with stuff just on a day-to-day basis. Could I shadow you for the day? Please, go ahead, no problem at all. And I've just helped them with other things, how to view images, how to compose images, how to post-process them. My forte, I guess, is post-processing up to print and that kind of stuff, so I spent a lot of time with people helping them do that. So the other thing was, I did get a book, a and I've forgotten to bring it down now. But someone sent me a book to review a while ago. I did use it on another Photo Show podcast. This is slick. And now I can't find it. But someone sent me a podcast. I'll put it in the show notes. Someone sent me a book, rather. I'll put it in the show notes about a photography book. And I had a quick flick through it, and it was really, really good. So go down to your local WH Smiths. I think you can get stuff on Amazon about, you know, basics of photography for a pound, photography for dummies, those kind of things. They'll all get you started, if nothing else. And once you've got that idea of, you know, the aperture, working with the capture speed, working with the amount of light that gets into the camera for your exposure, that once you've got exposure worked out, then you won't have to worry. You'll do whatever you want from that point. It's not that hard. Composing an image, take some more images, see if they look nice. Read about rule of thirds, Google search. There's loads and loads of stuff that you can do. I've never had a go with online tutorials, so I cannot tell you if they're any good or not. Sorry. Next question, Andrew. Right. Recently, I was directing a paid video shoot in a studio for a band's live performance. Because we needed four cameras running simultaneously, the band had brought along two other camera operators to expand my two-man operation. The new guys had loads of great equipment, lights, black flags, shoulder rigs, flight cases, lenses, the whole works. However, when I got their footage back into the editing suite, a significant amount of it was unusable, and a lot of the shots were ruined by two operators constantly playing with the focus, shaky, weird framing that favoured the ceiling, or generally filling the frame with something dull, e.g. long shots of the keyboard player stood doing nothing waiting for their bit. We called it the cult of gear. So question one, have you encountered the cult of gear fetish for equipment where the actual craft of photography is secondary? I think you're into the problems that most people have got with lots of technology anyway. I mean, I've got the cult of gear. If you come to Mac, you know, I'm no great Mac expert. I'm no coder or anything like that, but I love buying shiny, don't I? And I think we all love buying the shiny. So there's a certain element of that, I suppose. Do I buy equipment because it's shiny? Yeah, I buy equipment because I can sometimes. And I've got a lot of stuff I don't use anymore. Or I've bought stuff that I thought I'd be using, and when it came down to using it, it was too hard to integrate into the workflow that I'd already got or the way that I shot. So I'm guilty of that a little bit, I suppose. Yes. Two, what do you think is the least important yet most fetished piece of camera equipment? My vote goes for Steadicam type gear. I don't know anything for Steadicam at all, I'm afraid, so I haven't got a clue. I think people buy too many lenses that have got crossovers. The one thing I'll do when I talk to amateurs who stop me and ask me questions at companies is they'll say, oh, what lenses have you got? And then they say, oh, I've got that one and that one and that one. And you'll find that they've got huge crossovers in lenses. You know, they've got the 17-40 and the 17-85 in the Canon range, and there's no point in that. There really isn't a point. Just watch carefully what you buy. Get yourself a lens that will do something that's quite short on the focal length, so 50 millimetres perhaps, 35 millimetres, so you've got that width and wide angle there so you can get more in. And then start to think about mid-range lenses that go up from there, and think as well about zooms and primes, whether you want a prime lens or whether you need the zoom lens for flexibility. If you talk about going on family holidays, you know, taking a zoom lens is great. You probably won't get low f-stop on it, and you won't get loads of artistic effects, but it means you're carrying one lens around all holiday rather than carrying three or four. Just think carefully about what you're going to buy with your lenses. Don't just run off into them. Cult of gear. It's a new statement. And we might call the podcast Cult of Gear. There we go. Good question, Andy. Last one from Ian W. Any tips or tricks for low light or night work beside the obvious, like a tripod? I'm starting to get a liking for low light stuff, but having an 18 megapixel crop sensor on my 7D, I can find that overly long exposures like star trails can very easily create a lot of sensor noise, probably due to so many being packed in so tightly. I did a 20-minute exposure recently and the noise was terrible. Now I was suffering with some sodium light pollution, but it may not have helped. But I was thinking about stacking multiple shorter exposures, 50 to 100, to try and get the same effect. There is a service that you can get where you take a black image with a lens cap on and you send it away, and they will tell you which pixels are prone to aberrated light capture. So you'll get a map back of where the pixels are, and then you can put that in as your static, and it'll compensate in stacks and things like that within Photoshop to help you out. If you're talking about a 20-minute exposure, I mean, if you're getting noise on an image, you've got three things to look at. Particularly for short exposures, look at your ISO. So if your ISO is, I mean, there's lots of cameras that do decent noise reduction there, but if you're talking about being above 800, then cameras up to the last year probably will probably not exist very well beyond 800. 800 is probably the last usable level for print at any decent size. I wouldn't shoot anything beyond 800 for commercially with my old 1DS Mark II. That really is its limit. The 1600 stuff is just not usable, and the 3200 is just utterly granny crap. Probably the last stop on all of your cameras for ISO is unusable. So first thing is check your ISO. If your ISO's up there, get your ISO right back. Get it as low as you possibly can, and you won't have a problem with noise, theoretically. The next thing for noise is not just the fact that you've got a small sensor that's tightly packed, but you probably find at a 20-minute exposure, you've got a lot of heat generated on the sensor. Now, one of the big issues for noise on sensors is heat generation. If you look at astrophotographers, they'll cool the sensors on their cameras using little additional equipment before they even stick them on the thing to then start taking the picture. The longer the exposure, the hotter the sensor is going to get, the more heat there is, the more likelihood you've got of noise. So if you're looking to get star trails and you're at 20 minutes, I'm not surprised you got a lot of noise in there. Shorter images and stacking them will probably help you, though. And then just take out the motion, non-motion element of it. But, I mean, those are your two basic levels, really, to think about ISO and then think about the heat off the sensor, I would suggest. Also, maybe trying to paint with light with a torch for buildings and landscapes. Not star trails, of course, though, because that would be stupid. Anyway, any thoughts on the matter? I know it's not your usual field with trying astro low light. I have some bearing. We'll have some bearing, I guess. There you go. Painting with light, I mean, most of the time with that kind of stuff, I think they use bulb an awful lot. And I keep saying to people, I keep getting loads of pictures of the ISS flying over, and they always use multiple exposures and then join them together, and you can see the stops between the ISS trail. Well, A, that's the first thing you should do, is fill those in Photoshop, because it would look far better than having stops. And the second thing is, crank everything down. It's only 5 minutes of flight over the top for the complete view of the damn thing. Open it up on the bulb, grow some balls, use bulb. We like bulb. Try it, you'll love it. And have a mess around as well, because you're going to have to shoot some before it gets there, but you should get a lovely, long, thin trail straight over the top that will look absolutely super gorgeous. Try bulb. You'll like it. Ian's in the chat room. He said, I was running at ISO 100 f16. Cheers, Ewan. Right, so your noise is coming then probably, I would say, from the heat off your sensor. That's where your problem's going to go. Cool your sensor down before you start, or shorter exposure that uses less. Sorry, pal. Nothing else I can say. That's it. We have a sponsor. Yes, we do. We're sponsored by UK2. They're brilliant. Absolutely fabulous. They pick up all the bandwidth on the shows. We love them to bits. You should look after them too, because without them, we're going to go away effectively. There are deals galore out there at the moment. There isn't a service that they offer that we can't give you an offer code for. So go to britishtechnetwork.com, click on the sponsors link, click on the UK2 banner. That'll open up in a separate tab. Buy what we want to buy, and then come back and use the offer codes. And you can get ridiculous, ridiculous reductions at the moment on stuff. You won't pay for DNS management at all. You get 20% off all of your domains. No one does 20%. £50 off a first month of a server. Brilliant. UK2 look after us, and they're going to continue to look after us for the next couple of years. So please, please, please look after them. Cheers. There you go. That was me on my own doing the photo show as normal, but without the discussion. I've done 40 minutes. I'll take that. I'm going to edit a bit out, though. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.